This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now download as a podcast off our website at progressive.org. Today, it's my pleasure to have here in the studio with me Ha Jin, the author of Waiting, and most recently, War Trash, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the winner of the Penn Faulkner Award and was chosen by the New York Times as one of the top 10 or 11 books of 2004. Ha Jin, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
Tell me how you became a writer.
Oh, in fact, I never thought I would be a writer when I was young. But I studied literature for many years. When I came to the States in 1985, I was doing a graduate work at Brandeis University, basically.
In literature?
On literature and modern poetry. So, you know, in other words, I was trained to be a critic rather than a writer. But later I realized I could not return to China because of the Tiananmen massacre.
At Brandeis at the time of the Tiananmen Square massacre?
Yes, I was completing my dissertation at the time.
Well, tell me how you witnessed that and what your feelings were as you saw that horror unfold.
I was in a shock for several weeks. I was dazed, and I had served in the Chinese army. The army was called the People's Army, but now everything was reversed, and the army was so brutal, and so many innocent lives were destroyed. So I could not accept this.
Were you surprised that the army or that the government resorted to that kind of violence?
Of course, I was in a shock. I just didn't know. Couldn't figure it out. I was angry. Of course, I was very, very angry. But then later, I realized I would not return to China.
Well, you decided because you thought you'd be jailed, or you couldn't, as a person of conscience, return?
And personal choice, you know, personal choice. And because if I returned, I would teach. And then at the time, every school was owned by the state. So I would not be employed by a government like that. But my dissertation was really aimed at the Chinese job market in comparative poetics. So I really couldn't find a job for 3 years.
That must have been very dislocating for you to make that decision, leaving family behind, I'm sure.
Yes, my parents and siblings, they were all back in China. But fortunately, my son came out after the Tiananmen incident. And that was another reason for me to decide to stay, because it was clear to me that he would become American. I wasn't sure for myself about my own life, but for him it was clear.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guest today is Ha Jin, the author of Waiting and recently War Trash. So you said you couldn't get a job teaching. If you couldn't get a job teaching because your studies were geared toward the Chinese market,
yes,
what did you do then?
And then I went to Boston University to learn how to write fiction, as a way to wait and to get some time, and also to shift my field a little bit. And so somehow, step by step, and before I finished the master's in creative writing at BU, Emory University hired me. And so suddenly it became real. Writing became my profession.
You had to write, probably.
I had to write, yes.
And I want to go back to the comment you made about your son would be raised in America, would be an American.
Yes.
And yet you didn't know how you or where you would fit in. How did you wrestle with that question yourself?
For him, it was clear because I saw a lot of suffering and misery and violence, and they were all gratuitous, didn't serve any purpose and no meaning at all. So I wanted him to get out of the that cycle. For me, I didn't know what to do. I was confused, very confused, and I thought perhaps I could write, but again, how far could I go in English? And there was such uncertainty that I was overwhelmed.
But you got over that.
I'm still in that kind of state, but gradually I realized that uncertainty is a part of the writing process. If everything is clear from the very beginning, you know, a book won't be a good book. You have to take some kind of risk.
Talk to me about some of the risks you took in this latest book, War Trash.
Stylistically, it is kind of risk because it's very different from other books I've written. It is rather flat because it was told by an old man who's basically he's dying, and this is the last thing he would do before he died.
And he's looking back. It's all
yes,
backward looking.
Yes, and so it is characterized, the voice, and told by a very old man, so the language cannot be very exciting. That was a risk, and that was a deliberate choice. And that's part of it. Also, the material, I think, how could I tell it convincingly? In the very beginning, I wasn't sure.
You dedicate the book to your father, who is a Korean War vet, and this is a book about the Korean War, about
yes.
Chinese soldiers
mm-hmm.
in the Korean War being prisoners of war.
Yes.
And the brutality that they faced at the hands of the Americans, at the hands of the Koreans, and at the hands of fellow Chinese, some who were affiliated with the Communist Party and mm-hmm. some who were affiliated with Chiang Kai-shek.
Mm-hmm.
So you're wrestling with all of those themes. And your narrator, who has this old man, who has such a strong voice and a strong mm-hmm. presence throughout, is a translator.
Yes.
And you yourself are a translator, if you will, of this experience. And was there some symbolism you had in making him a translator?
Yeah, I think that's true. But in terms of the structure or the purpose of the book, his role as a translator is essential. This would enable him to interact with different people, different groups. Also mean that meant he was not a regular POW. Generally speaking, a soldier was caught and then he or she was put in jail. That's it. There are 50 yards of field of vision was very limited. Then the story would be over there. And so I think that's why I wanted to create a POW prisoner who was capable of moving around, who could see more, who could interact with the people.
It's an amazing story, and I'm wondering what some of the influences prior writers had influence on you, because there are echoes of Solzhenitsyn or Dostoevsky or Orwell even.
You're right, Dostoevsky was a big influence for this book. And before this book, when I was working on my previous novel, The Craze, I had read the book, the fictionalized memoir, Notes from the Dead House. Four times I read three translations, and four times I read that book. Fortunately, I was very familiar with that book. That the book described meticulously the prison life in Russia. So for me, that gave me an idea. I want to reverse this a little bit. I want to fictionalize the memoirs, make it more feel like a novel. So that book was really opened my vision as a writer for this book.
And the memoir is framed that way, with the 72-year-old man introducing
yes.
the narrative and then going back in time and then forward, and to the end, the narrator as a 72-year-old
sure.
man comes
yes.
back.
That's a novelistic structure,
right.
yes.
And it has a nice symmetry there. I wanted to go back to your giving this narrator, this translator, an entree into various worlds within the mm-hmm. prison community. Mm-hmm. And the narrator says, and this is why I mentioned Orwell, mm-hmm. why are some inmates more privileged than others?
Sure,
and
yeah.
so I thought that was an echo there. Tell me what you think, what you want the term war trash, which you use three or four times, uh-huh. at least by my count
sure,
in the book,
yes, yes.
to mean.
And, you know, the term was invented by me. Myself, and there are, of course, there are different kind of insults and curse words among the soldiers. But this word I use, I decided on it because in English there is the term white trash. So white trash might echo to me. I think it might echo that term so that people can realize this is about human beings, not just the wasted things. That's why I think wall trash, as a term, I use it, you are right, three or four times in the book.
And it's used by different people. It's used by one of the followers of Chiang Kai-shek, who's
yes.
the most brutal.
Yes.
person. There's a lot of brutality in here,
yes.
but this was the most sadistic person who
yes.
actually took a knife and disemboweled someone
yes.
and
yes.
put the knife on the tip of the put the heart, this guy's
yes.
heart on the tip of his knife.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. And he used the term war trash to,
yes.
to refer to some of the prisoners of war who
yes.
didn't follow his line.
Yes.
And but also you use it as a term to describe the methods of the Communist Party as well, who are using prisoners of war as
sure. yes.
as chess pieces, you
yes.
say, or as fertilizers is another
yes.
example, which
yes.
is similar to trash
yes.
in
yes.
a way.
Yes.
You make some comparison between the two, the nationalists, other than this very sadistic mm. person you seemed to feel were, well, I don't know. What is your comparison?
You know, this, again, it's not my view. I have to distance myself from the narrator. And he is in that situation. He was, in fact, at least one generation older than me. So, and his view, he was prone to socialism, I think. He doesn't believe either in communism or in capitalism, because he had seen that the old China somehow was wrecked by capitalism and feudalism. And so to a degree, he liked the communists, but also, on the other hand, he was scared by them.
He didn't like their methods, he said at one point.
I know, and the way of controlling people's mind.
And because in prison, he would see the prisons that were dominated internally by mm. communist prisoners, mm-hmm. that the leader of the communists in prison would send other prisoners on reckless
yes, yes.
campaigns
yes.
or assaults on
yes.
the soldiers and the guards, which
sure.
were inevitably going to lead to massacres, and yes,
uh-huh.
they did lead
sure.
to massacres.
Yes.
So that's how we're able to see how they were used just as pawns. I guess
I
that
know,
would be
yes.
another
yes.
way we would put it. So to me, that you know, this wrestling with that the narrator does between capitalism and communism, between the Chiang Kai-shek forces mm-hmm. and the Communist Party forces. It was interesting. For people who haven't read the book War Trash, the prisoner has to continually choose.
Yes.
Tell me how you decided on that motif, because that reappears several times.
And in history, in fact, a good number, many prisoners, they went through the same experience. They had to decide because they moved to different. Once they moved to a different camp, there'll be the different factions in dominance, and so they were forced to make different choices. But for the protagonist, he was not loyal to any group, but he made a promise to his mother and fiance that he would come back at any cost. So that is what's his principle. Other things are less relevant, but he had to survive physically, he had to survive. I think that's why he changed to different group.
I mean, it is the plight of a very decent, the narrator is a very decent, non-ideological person who has the most down-to-earth reasons for wanting to return to his homeland, which is not to, you know, fly the flag of the Communist Party, but to be, as you said, with his loved ones. You have a line in there that the narrator says, wondering whether any flag is worth dying for.
Yes.
And do you have an opinion yourself on that question?
And I think he said that because what was his reflection on the sacrifice of so many lives, dozens of lives, people, POWs were killed. And I think given that dramatic situation, I think he was right. I agree with him.
I mean, that situation was when, on the anniversary of the Mao Zedong founding of Communist China, all the prisoners were supposed to raise the flag.
Yes, and they were basically, but they were used as a way to create news. So the flag, it does have a symbolic meaning, but at the same time, it is used as a way, as a kind of weapon, to kill human beings. So that's why I think he has his kind of negative feeling about that.
I've heard you describe war trash Hajin as a universal anti-war novel. Is that could you elaborate on that?
You know, people say that this book is about how the U.S. army abuses prisoners. It's not. It's every army. In fact, here in this novel, the prisoners, they treat themselves even worse than the captors. But I think it's fair to say that every army had some kind of history for prisoner abuse. It's not because of whether the army is good or bad. War by itself is a monstrous thing. It's the worst human activity. Once that starts, no rules would apply, and the worst of humanity would be unleashed. That's why we should try to stop a war, prevent a war at any cost.
Hajin, you have a great line along this train of thought where your narrator says or observes how easily humanity can deteriorate in wretched conditions.
Yes.
And we've seen that many times in the last 100 years. I want to return to this question of torture because there's so many echoes with contemporary U.S. Scandals and the Iraq War itself, because you talk about the torture that happened at the hands of the Americans, and you're right that the descriptions you have are even harsher when it's done by the prisoners themselves or by the Chinese or by the Koreans. And yet I was struck by the U.S. Army commanders having the Geneva Conventions posted in the prison.
Yes.
Because obviously we have had this whole issue here in the United States with George W. Bush and Donald Rumsfeld saying that the Geneva Conventions don't apply, much less not posting them at Abu Ghraib. Did you want to address that, or was this written before that?
This was a fact. You know, the history in there, his historical sources already shown there, you know, has written sources indicate that this happened in some of the camps, and the Geneva Convention was the main clauses were posted in the camp in different languages, and I think it was fair to say that at least the U.S. Army tried, whether at least in appearance, tried to be fair, to be law abiding. And I think the Chinese prisoners, to the narrator, I think he respected that. He thought that as kind of human decency.
Was it also true, you say, the narrator says that there was a question, a debate going on in Washington at the time, whether Washington should get out of the Geneva Conventions, whether the Geneva Conventions applied to the Korean conflict?
And that's true, because that was not decided whether to sign finally, I think. I think the United States agreed, but not sanctified at the time.
Do you have an opinion then that you'd like to make about the Bush-Rumsfeld policy at Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo Bay or Afghanistan?
I don't know whether it's their policy exactly, but I think the war itself was a terrible mistake. We were misled into it. That's a fact. We have to accept, and somebody should be responsible for that, because it's a huge mistake. And a president like Clinton, you know, he had an affair, but it didn't affect other people except his own family. But when a nation was led into a war on wrong grounds, that's a huge disaster. Somebody has to be held responsible, so that we can have some kind of precedent for later national leaders.
There's not a lot of responsibility that is meted out to the people in this novel either, in War Trash.
That's when I think when a war starts, you know, rules don't apply anymore.
Tell me, I'm always interested when novelists talk about books within their novel. I mean, you have Uncle Tom's Cabin in here several times. Why did you bring that in?
And that is a book, it was viewed, has been viewed as a progressive novel. In China, in the other socialist countries as well, because it was anti-slavery, and it revealed the dark side of American history and society. And so that book was never banned. There are other writers such as John Steinbeck, Leslie Hughes, and Howard Fast, and some others, Jack London. These were never banned. They were available in China. And so the Chinese army, in fact, they did have some kind of literature, but that was censored.
And very selected.
Very selected.
So the literature that cast the United States in a bad light was okay.
Yes.
And then you describe also, I'm driving to where you what you think the role or the importance of art is, because you describe in War Trash, Hajin, some of the soldiers, some of the captives, some of the prisoners putting on plays. You weren't impressed with the plays or with the poetry, but or the songs, because it was agitprop. It was propaganda. Yeah. And you say this art was strictly utilitarian or crude.
Yes.
And so how do you, as a writer who has a strong moral sensibility, get around or the problem of just making transcending the problems of agitprop?
I think in a larger sense that those episodes reflect the common theory of art and literature, the purpose of art and literature, and they were supposed to be part of the revolution machine, and that's why art and literature are supposed to be useful, to serve a purpose. But by doing that, that also means you have to serve the moment of history. I think that's dangerous, because literature not supposed to be just the current news. It's supposed to last a little bit longer. In Ezra Pound's words, news that stays news. So I think that's why we have to, literature cannot always deal with history directly or serve history at the moment.
You write about the need for patience and refinement.
Yes,
in art.
Yes, I think that's necessary for in art and literature, because the work has to be well made. That's the first step. Other than that, the work cannot stay long enough. The news, so and it has to be refined, and that also requires patience and hard labor.
What are you working on now?
I'm working on a book set in the United States, so it's a departure from World Trash.
Have you exhausted the vein that you were working in there for a while on China, and you're steering this way now?
Not exhausted. China is huge, you know. In fact, there are books to be written, endless. There are a lot of things available. On the other hand, I feel my heart is closer to the American experience. That's why I want to write about it.
And what about the American experience are you looking to write about?
Mainly the immigrant experience. I think for me that's close to my heart, and I have left China in terms of writing, because even World Trash is a book set outside China. It's a step away from China toward the United States.
In fact, the narrator is watching The Simpsons at the end.
Yes, so. Yes. In fact, he wrote the book in the States.
I'm struck by a comment you made earlier about the narrator neither accepting capitalism nor communism. I've heard it said of the current China that is a bad blend of two bad systems,
sure,
of capitalism,
true,
and Stalinism.
Yes.
What is your perception of that?
I think China is a very volatile place now. It can, sure, in the living standard may be better for many people, but there is a vast majority of the population who are very, very poor, extremely poor, and a lot of infrastructure was damaged. So the country, I think, was weakened in that sense. And I don't think China will be a very strong country. I don't think so.
The Pentagon thinks so, though.
And I think that's a way to get a big budget, I guess. But really, China cannot be a superpower at all. It's impossible.
But its economy is booming, though.
Booming, but it has huge population. And the larger part of it is very poor. And also China has so many neighbors, problematic neighbors, that will take away and weaken China. And it has many problems we don't have here. And
like,
China will be, in fact, impeded in that.
What are some of those problems?
And vast unemployment. And how to deal with these people from the countryside, young people, and the environment, the pollution.
How long can the government keep a lid on this very volatile situation?
I don't think they can remain like this for long. Some measures have to be taken, or some change has to take place.
And do you see a big protest movement coming up? Do you see another Tiananmen Square?
I don't think so, but there have been so many thousands of protests at the local level. I think the communists are very nervous. The whole country just riddled with all kinds of protests.
Have you been back since you left the country?
No, I haven't.
Do you want to get back?
Sure, you know, to visit, sure. I would be happy to see my parents and siblings. But for many years, I couldn't have my passport renewed, so I couldn't travel.
Would you be allowed back in now?
Officially, I should, but I'm not sure.
But you hope to get there soon?
Sure, yes.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. Ha Jin, author of War Trash, thanks so much for being my guest.
Thank you, Matt.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.